You're listening to Siren Radio with me, Andrew David. You've just heard the band and you're probably thinking, it's not Thursday, it's Tuesday. Why? Well, it's a fresh new start. We've just gone past the 1st of March, which meteorologically is the start of spring. And we thought, let's have a bit of a change. All sorts of reasons why we're technically having a change. But one thing I can do, press all these magic buttons this end and say those immortal words, ladies and gentlemen, are we through to the man cave in Los Angeles and the wonder that is Bruce K. Rosenblum? Are you there, Bruce?
I am here, and you have made it successfully into the man cave this morning on a beautiful, brisk, sunny, cold day here in Los Angeles.
And I wish we could see you in a lovely sort of white, fluffy, rather designer shirt for you, and a little ruffy neck thing, sort of a thing to keep your neck warm and to keep those germs off. You're looking, and your hair is well cut, unlike mine, which is probably a good reason why we're only on audio. Lots to talk about because, of course, we missed last week. The most important, well, the most obvious thing from us, our point of view, is the fact we saw this thing called CPAC. We heard President Trump's first outing and also Ted Cruz being really quite extraordinary. So where do you want to go, Bruce?
Oh, we can go anywhere. There are so many fire spots, as they say, or hot spots around the political spectrum here that we could go anywhere you'd like, Andrew. We want to start with CPAC, which is the Conservative Political Action Committee.
Well, that's the thing we've seen quite a lot of. So talk us through that, because it looked like same old from Trump.
Well, it was definitely not the same old from CPAC, but it was definitely the same old from Trump and his cronies who all spoke. A lot of them spoke rather than be at the Capitol to talk about the a coronavirus stimulus package that was being voted on. But, so CPAC usually is a place where conservatives kind of, you know, hash out policy and Republican platform. But that's not – that hasn't been the case under the Trump administration. It's probably not the case going forward. So it was really a convention of where these guys could all meet again to air their grievances and to deny what happened at the Capitol and to – you know, deny what happened during the election, to continue to spread the big lie that the election was stolen, that that states didn't adhere to their constitutional objectives when it came to voting during the election. Then again, the country had never been through a pandemic where they needed to find ways to allow people to get out and vote in a safe manner. So very, very different year versus any other year. And then, of course, Ted Cruz, the usual suspects showed up. Ted Cruz, who had bailed on his home state of Texas to go to Cancun to get away from the bad weather and not help his constituency, then decides to come home and take some publicity shots of himself throwing bottles of water into people's car trunks to make it look like he was trying to help. But then ran down to Florida right away again to be at the CPAC and again spread the big lie and kind of bash Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who actually raised $5 million to help the people of Texas who have been suffering down there with no power, no clean drinking water, while Ted Cruz has been off either hiding or name calling or being a Trump guy. Josh Hawley did the same thing, talking about what other states did illegally during the election. He's from Missouri and he's basically trying to tell Pennsylvania and Arizona and Georgia what, he's trying to butt into their business. Spreading his falsehoods. The governor of South Dakota, Kristi Noem, spreading, anti-science kind of falsehoods that she's taking pride in the fact that she allowed her people in her state to do what they wanted to do, never had a lockdown, didn't require masks, allowed the Sturgis motorcycle rally to happen with a 500,000 people gathering there, South Dakota, which became a super spreader event. South Dakota has the highest per capita death rate and infection rate in the country yet. She's saying what a great job she did, and they had very few people in their hospitals. Which has been disputed and again, falsehoods from her. So it was just, and then Trump came on for an hour and a half and again, spewed the big lie. The election was stolen. he may run again because he wants to beat the Democrats for a third time. Said that Joe Biden's had the worst first month in the history of any president in the country. He said he's attacked women, he's attacked immigrants, he's undone all of Trump's achievements. Well, if you can list Trump's achievements on one hand, I dare you. But you know, so the Biden administration has been kind of pushing back against some of the nonsense that went on at CPAC. The gentleman Mayorkas, who is involved, the secretary who's now one of the cabinet member who is involved in trying to undo the damage down at the border, said that the Trump administration, as they did in many other areas, left the immigration, policy and the situation down at the southern border in horrendous shape. And they're trying to just kind of figure out how to undo the mess, how to get children back with their parents. It's just a horrible situation down there that Trump left them.
The problem is, and you were talking, we just had a little chat before we went on air, is that what Trump did between realizing he'd lost the election and stepping down as president, he did a lot of unscrambling and messing up and fiddling around with things. And yeah, it's inheritance, isn't it? The first 100 days when hopefully your new administration can get to grips with things, they're being bogged down in stuff, aren't they?
Yeah, they're bogged down in a lot of stuff, I have to tell you, if the fact is that, you know, Trump walked away from the pandemic months ago and said it would go away, and yet over 500,000 people are now dead as a result of it. And then he led an insurrection at the Capitol in which five more people died, and he gets acquitted in the Senate from having any role in that insurrection. And again, his feet aren't held to the fire on the fact that he let the country down on the pandemic. You know, he says that he got the vaccines going. Well, he left the distribution part of the vaccine process in disarray. Biden has promised that would get fixed and the vaccines would get out, and he promised 100 million vaccines in his first 100 days. He's almost at the 100 million mark now in almost half, you know, not even halfway through his first 100 days. So
that's fantastic.
Talk about a president that's had a bad month. I think, you know, focusing on what he promised to get the pandemic under control is a pretty darn big accomplishment. And it's got people really feeling good about things in this country. More people now are wanting to get shots. More places are opening up. A lot of the guidelines for the various, you know, protocols of people getting the shots are being, they're kind of in flux now because it's going to be easier for more people to start getting the shots. And they said by May or June, we should have, you know, a good portion of the country vaccinated, and this herd immunity process can really start. And what Biden said, by Christmas, you know, we could be starting to look at more of a normal Christmas this year than last year. So I think his work with his science team, his people on working with the various vaccine companies, Pfizer, Moderna, AstraZeneca, Johnson & Johnson. I mean, it's been amazing. The distribution chain seems to be working really well. I've already had my two shots. I'm feeling great. And it's a whole attitude change that you're now starting to see. And I think once this stimulus bill gets passed, you know, and it's facing a lot of blowback in the House, but from the House, which did finally pass it, and the Senate, because there's things in the bill that people just don't like. But it'll provide the money necessary for schools to start reopening safely, giving schools the funds they need to provide, you know, good ventilation systems, and getting, you know, the cleaning materials needed in the classrooms. You know, a lot of schools are starting to open here in California already. My grandson is back in school.
Wow. Today.
And my daughter-in-law has gotten her first shot. Teachers are starting to get pushed to the front of the line, which was something they should have probably done early on. But, they got to get all the teachers vaccinated before they will really feel comfortable starting to open the schools up. And they're doing that. It's starting to happen. But so there's a lot of great stuff happen. A lot of the bad stuff that's going on is unfortunate, because a lot of it was things that have been, again, carried over that happened during the Trump administration, that it's falling in the lap of Biden and he's getting blowback from it. One of the most obvious one and the one of the bigger ones is the whole report on who actually ordered the killing of Khashoggi, the journalist that was brutally murdered by the Saudi Arabians. And at the time it happened, they were blaming the prince directly, but Trump kept saying, well, maybe it was, maybe it wasn't, we don't really know. But, you know, Trump went ahead and did this major arms deal with Saudi Arabia and pushed that and never released the intelligence community's report on what, on who they thought was responsible. And so he leaves office and the report finally gets put out into the public and it points directly at the Saudi prince. And Biden, who had been saying that the prince needs to be held accountable and Saudi Arabia needs to be held accountable, is now under fire for not punishing the prince directly the way the press feels that he should be punished. And it's a dicey situation because, you know, and they're saying that they're taking a look at the whole situation there and the Biden administration wants to recalibrate the relationship. They've already put a travel ban for those, you know, close to the Saudi prince. People in his orbit, there's been 75 or so, they call it the Khashoggi ban, I believe is what they're calling it, Khashoggi travel ban, not letting these people, you know, into the country. And they're putting sanctions in place. And I believe Biden put a stop to the arms sale immediately, you know, because it's, you know, it's a weird relationship. I mean, they say that Saudis are our ally in that region, yet, you know, the 9/11 bombings are tied directly to Saudi Arabia, as well as the formation of ISIS. So, you know, are they really our allies or not? And should the prince be held personally accountable and punished for it? And this is a guy that's going to take over the leadership of Saudi Arabia. So, you know, it's a fine line, but Biden, you know, it's dropped into Biden's lap and they're holding him to some of the things that he said. And, you know, so, you know, it's, you know, he's getting some blowback on that. And then also when it comes to women, he was attacked on, he said, women should be ashamed of Joe Biden. Well, not directly related to Joe Biden, but directly related to what's happening in New York with Governor Andrew Cuomo, who is under fire now to resign because of three allegations of sexual harassment from former employees. Here was a guy, and he's also getting blowback in New York from hiding the actual death count from nursing homes, saying that he downplayed the nursing home deaths because when those people were moved to hospitals and died there, their deaths weren't attributed to nursing homes, they were attributed to hospitals, which made him look. So he's under investigation for whether he played with the numbers there, and he's under investigation now for alleged sexual harassment. And so now they're pointing back at Biden to say, does Biden still support Governor Cuomo? And, you know, they're saying, well, if he does, then, you know, it's a slap in the face to women. But, you know, Biden's people have been saying, you know, Joe Biden has always said that women who come forward should be heard and respected. And he's sticking to that. And they're trying to hold Biden to the words that he uttered a year ago when everybody was lavishing praise on Cuomo for his handling of the pandemic in New York. And he actually won an Emmy Award for his press conferences. Because Biden said that Cuomo should be looked at as the gold standard for how to handle the pandemic, which at the time it was. And also Gavin Newsom in California was looked at as one of the gold standards for how he was handling the pandemic here. And now they're trying to recall Newsom because of how he handled the pandemic when we had a resurgence here and he shut down the state again. And Republicans didn't like that. So there's a recall out for Governor Newsom's hide here in California. So, you know, so Biden's kind of gotten thrown in, you know, thrown into that mix with the cleaning up the mess from Trump's immigration policy at the border, cleaning up the mess from Trump hiding the results of the investigation on who's to blame in Saudi Arabia, you know, trying to, you know, walk a fine line with what's going on with Andrew Cuomo in New York. So, the another big battle where he's facing blowback is his COVID stimulus package that is a $1.9 trillion package where there's money to help state and local governments provide money for the first responders, to provide money for schools to be able to reopen, to provide money for small businesses and people who have been on food lines and whose unemployment benefits are about to run out. You know, so but also in there is a $15 minimum wage writer as well. And that's really something near and dear to the progressive wing. So the bill and the Republicans are totally against the $1.9 trillion spend and the $15 an hour minimum wage. The minimum wage in this country is half that right now, so it's pretty mind-boggling.
$7.50. That's incredible.
Yeah, a little bit more, like $7.95, I think. It's not, that's a national average. Some states are higher, some are around the average, but not a good, it's horrible. Anyway, so the Republicans are fighting that, and the progressives are really pushing for the $15 minimum wage. Well, it passed the House without any bipartisan support. It was basically no Republican voted for it, and two Democrats voted against it too. But it passed. Now it's going to the Senate, where the Senate parliamentarian has already ruled that putting a $15 minimum wage into the bill does not fit their guidelines. So it's going to get stripped out. So now the progressive wing of the Democratic Party is really teed off at Biden, because he's going to say he's just going to follow the tradition of the Senate, and he's not going to push for that to go back in if the parliamentarian overruled it. Now the vice president could overrule the parliamentarian. But they're not. They're going to follow the tradition of the Senate. So Bernie Sanders and his cohorts in the progressive side of the Democratic Party are, needless to say, teed off. The Republicans probably feel better about that, but they have other issues because they feel a lot of the money is going to favor the Democratic states, and it's going to be money to clean up the mess from the riots that happened during the protests over the summer. You know, it's mind-boggling that they're using that as an excuse, but they do. And so Republicans are also saying that even though Biden's calling for both sides to come and express their ideas, Republicans are saying that Biden's team really didn't mean it. It was just chatter, but there was no sincerity behind it, and that he hasn't really listened to what Republicans had to say. God. So, I mean, he's getting it. I mean, he talk about a guy that walked into a real poop storm, so to speak. You know, Biden certainly did. But
on top of all of that, people are now looking forward to the midterms in 2 years' time. I understand that President Trump's suggesting some of his family stand. And there are 43 states, I think you were telling me in our back chat, are putting in legislation to make it more difficult for people to vote. I mean, it really is, as you quite succinctly put it, a poop store.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, the fact that 43 states, the Republican legislators in those states have passed bills calling for ways to make it more difficult to vote, especially people of color in states like Georgia, states like Michigan, states like Pennsylvania, states like Arizona. the list goes on and on. Shortening up pre-registration, shortening up absentee voting, making it harder to do absentee voting. Providing all sorts of different kinds of proof, shortening the registration periods. I mean, anything that they can do, voting on weekends, anything that they can do, basically they know the trends of how people of color vote in this country, and anything they can do to suppress their ability to do that, they're doing. Because that's how the Democrats won back those states through the black communities, the black urban, big urban cities in Detroit and in Atlanta, and places like that in Philadelphia. So it's no secret what they're doing, and they're pushing forward the big lie that the election was stolen and that these states, that it was rigged.
I'm just wondering, sorry.
The fact of the matter is over 60 lawsuits and every, local, every Supreme Court in every state, tossed out all those claims. There was no proof of voter fraud or anything. Yeah, of course, there's always things that happen, but not 8 million votes.
No.
Difference in the popular vote happen. You know what I'm saying? It's crazy that this lie is still being put out there. And you know what they say? The more you tell a lie,
the more people that believe
it. The more people that believe it. And what has to happen is that there's a voting rights act that's going to have to pass the House. And Merrick Garland, when he becomes confirmed as the attorney general in this country, is going to have to go after these states and uphold, and kind of put down some of these acts of suppression, because it's really glaringly obvious what's going on. And I hear about, they keep saying, well, all these disenfranchised, 74 million disenfranchised Trump voters. you know, are out there making all this noise. Well, it's not 74 million of them, but it's certainly a fringe portion of them. But where the heck are the 81 million people that voted for Biden? Why aren't they raising their arms in disgust and saying, enough of this already? 81 million of us voted for Biden to get Trump the heck out.
But I suspect underlying all of this and being sensible, I've got a little funny aside in a minute, but being sensible, I think we've all been worn down by the pandemic over the last, because we're almost coming up for the anniversary, the 1 year anniversary when I said goodbye to my colleagues at Siren and at the university and in the School of Journalism and came home and set up studio here. I think we've been so worn down by things. We just don't have the energy to engage at the level that's necessary for the 81 million to say, because they've done that. They think they've done their thing. They put their cross on the paper. They've got their man in and they think that's it. Look, go on and do the job. And the bit I chuckled at was, I'm just thinking, you know, first thing in the morning, 8 o'clock, Biden's there, Kamala's there. And they go out onto the balcony, look at the rose garden. There's daffodils and snowdrops and crocuses. And they've got a cup of hot chocolate in each hand or a cup of coffee. And Joe looks at Kamala and says, was it worth it? And, well, you know, really,
you know, they've got to focus. If they can get the shots in the arms and get the economy back and start helping these people who are in need, I think a lot of this other stuff goes away. And I don't think the Republicans are such a shoo-in in 2022. I think that could be the big lie here, the big myth. I think that, you know, if anybody's smart enough to see what Trump did to this country and the behavior of his followers out there and what they're doing, you know, why would anybody, you know, why would any mom with young kids, you know, want that for their children? I can't see it happening. I can't see people wanting to put the Republican Party back in power to control things, especially if, you know, Biden is, you know, doing what he said to beat the pandemic, which he looks like he's on track to do. If he's on track to bringing, you know, build back better, bringing the economy back and getting jobs, you know, creating jobs, you know, I can't see that happening as long as things are going in. If things are going in the right direction, people will not want to change. They'll want to give it more time to continue to get better. So he's got to get past this pandemic bill and get that going. And then he's got to start getting into the infrastructure and he's got to start doing a lot of the other things that he was talking about to create jobs in this country. And I think that he will, but you know, and Trump, I think, you know, the problem with Trump is that most presidents after they lose kind of go away and they let the new president, you know, do what they need to do. This guy's still out there. He still commands headlines for whatever, and he's still a big distraction out there.
Yeah.
And it's a dangerous thing. But you know, I think a lot of shoes are going to drop on him. There's at least five or six different lawsuits that are going to come down. There's potential lawsuits in Georgia for his interfering in the election by asking, you know, the Secretary of State there to find him votes to overturn the election. They're investigating that. A million pages of his tax returns have been finally freed up to the DA in Manhattan and the Attorney General in New York to kind of look at tax fraud and evasion of the Trump organization there. He's got these lawsuits from these women that made sexual assault allegations against him that are still out there. There's the Washington D.C. district attorney is looking to whether he can bring charges against Trump for his role in the insurrection that led to the Capitol riot. So there's a lot of big things that are going to drop on Trump that could just, you know, put him, you know, could just, you know, derail him as well. But you know, it's he still has his grip on the Republican Party. He says he's not creating a third party because he doesn't want the Republicans to be eating their own and creating an easy path for Democrats to win races. But I think there's a real divide within the Republican Party from the traditional, you know, Republicans versus these new Trumpers. And, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how the Republican Party, you know, ends up with this. You know, Trump's out there taking play, you know, his playbook is that out of, we've talked about this for over a year, for a couple of years with Trump, is that out of 1930s Germany. Yeah, with how he treats immigrants, he creates a You know, he creates scapegoats. He has enemy lists. He makes loyalty. He has to have loyalty pledges. he's an isolationist. He's a white nationalist. I mean, you know, if you made a check mark of things that happened in Germany in the 30s and things that have happened during the time Trump's been in a public figure, and those check marks go side by side all the way down. You name the area, and he's taken his cues right from that.
But the thing is, he doesn't hold the keys to power any longer. He may be bouncing about on the touchline, mixing my sporting metaphors, but he is not in control. He doesn't have his finger on the button, and he may be bogged down himself in the way that Biden's bogged down by a lot of stuff at the moment. He may end up being bogged down by lots of these court cases, particularly in New York, a million pages, and that's where it may suddenly stop and he gets stuck in the quagmire.
Absolutely, and you have to hope that's the case, because we can't continue this, and we have to hope that people recognize that at the ballot box in 2022 and then again in 2024. And who's really going to run in 2024? Is Biden going to have the physical stamina to do a second term? Will it be Kamala Harris? Is she going to have enough of a role, enough visibility to take on a campaign against that Trump party? It's going to be interesting, because who on the Democratic side is going to emerge as a strong leader to run if it's not going to be Biden or Harris? And and the Republicans really going to put a 78-year-old Trump up there and go through this?
You see, I've said this all along. There's a man who does this column every week on a community radio station between LA and the United Kingdom. And, you know, he's fired up and he's got power and he's got a lot of support in his little circle. It could be that I could be talking to President Bruce K. Rosenblum in 2024. Yeah.
I don't think so.
It's worth a try.
I just hope, I don't know. I don't know what the future brings for this country. I just know that, you know, we're only in the first, and we're not even in the first 100 days of 4-year term of Biden. And, he's, a lot of things have to get ironed out. You know, there's also talk, he's supposed to do a State of the Union within that first 100 days, or at the end of that first 100 days. And there's talk about, there's a lot of noise, I guess, through all these militia groups out there that they want to blow up the Capitol.
Oh,
and not let that state
of
the Union.
That's speculation. Let's leave that quietly there for the moment, because let's just not even think about going there. Let's think of accentuating the positives. But it is frightening. But Bruce, it's so good to hear from you. It's so good to see you're up and fired and you can manage the Tuesday. I have to say, we've recorded this a lot earlier than you'd normally do it. You're up at something like 7 o'clock in the morning to do it, because there's so many other things I need to get sorted out. We're recording this around about 3:30 in the UK on Tuesday, the 2nd of March. Would love to call you this time next week at a slightly more recognizably good time for you, which would be 8 in the morning, 4 for us. Will that be okay?
Of course it will be okay. I would look forward to it, and I always enjoy speaking with you kind of spewing all of what's going on in the world here and there to all of our wonderful listeners up in Lincoln.
It's a very great pleasure. Bruce K. Rosenblum, thank you so much indeed for being with us today.
My pleasure, Andrew. Have a great one.